Mike Bisaglia here from SevillePodcast.com. You are about to listen to Runcast, a weekly form of everything running, with your host Mark Lorenzoni, a community running expert who has been directing hundreds of area for nonprofit foot races and coaching thousands of runners for the past 30 years.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Runcast. Continued good weather. It's amazing.
I look back 2 years ago this time of year, and we were just coming off of our second major storm of the winter, and of course ultimately 65 inches. And as a coach and as a runner and working with runners on a regular basis, outdoor exercisers, the big obsession I had was trying to find dry pavement anywhere. We were so desperate. People forget. I mean, the tracks were covered, the Ridge Road, all of our normal haunts, sidewalks were covered in packed snow, you know, because I continue to rant about some of our neighbors. I get a little frustrated with within the city limits, don't shovel their sidewalks, what little some of them have. The snow falls, and 3 days later, people start to walk on it. They don't shovel, right. It becomes ice. But, I mean, it was a real challenge. I remember each week going around driving in my car trying to find blacktop that was exposed, that, you know, that was in good condition so my athletes could. And, you know, in the wintertime, people are training for the Boston Marathons, the 10-miler.
Right.
It was an ongoing challenge. But this winter, you know, I hear anybody complain about this winter. I'm like, you have to be new to the area. Either that or how could you have forgotten 2 winters ago?
You're from Houston or something.
The temperatures have been mild and the footing's been great. And I can start to get a little more cocky about this. And here we are, February 8th, 9th,
yeah.
You know, sure, we could get a major snowstorm, but we've dodged all of December, all of January, and good part of February without anything. So I'm loving it. We had a great meet and greet with Brian Fetzer and his two new assistants, Todd Morgan, who coaches the women, and Peter Watson, who's coaching the men, the distance runners. It was in the RMR clubhouse above the shop. And Brian Fetzer is so infectious and so positive and so community oriented, and he seems to be very sincere. I mean, I've only known him a month, and my New Jersey mentality always says, can this be for real, that when a person's like this? But he seems very much committed, Mike, to doing the types of things that are, he's smart, doing the types of things that are going to grow the sport.
Right.
The sport, it's in his best interest, and he's not doing it for this reason, but it's in his best interest to bring the community in as a partner, to welcome the community in as many ways as he can. Track meets for the community, all-comer meets, masters meets, kids. He wants to have the fastest kid in the ville, a 40-yard dash every year. Who's the fastest 8-year-old? Who's the fastest 9-year-old?
Right.
Pure, raw sprinting ability. Pretty cool. He really... but anyway, if you build the sport that way, you get people engaged. They're going to want to fill the stands when you
right.
do something like host the ACCs, which we are this spring, April 19th, 20th, and 21st. Or when he's cooked up this Battle of the Brains. I dubbed it that, and I don't know if he's so high on the term, but it seems to fit, because listen to this, Mike. Very
right.
cool. Who are the three top public institutions every year, year after year? Cal, Michigan, and Virginia.
Right.
One's on the West Coast, one's in the Midwest, one's in the East Coast. They're great athletic programs. I mean,
sure.
Cal, Michigan, and Virginia. If you put those three programs together, you go swimming, golf, lacrosse,
exactly.
tennis, soccer. You put it
everything.
All together, they are. Forget about Duke basketball. You're talking so many NCAA titles between, or certainly really competitive in their conference and in nationally.
Exactly.
And he said it'd be rotating. That 1 year we would host it. It'd be a track meet. And he said, think of all the alumni that would come. Like there's a lot of Cal and a lot of Michigan alumni
yeah.
in Virginia and in the Mid-Atlantic. You come to cheer. You know, I mean, it's just thinking outside,
right.
you know, the
That's
cliche
cool.
of thinking outside the box. And they're going to create this community loop that's going to go around the track, 3 laps to the mile. Very cool.
Huh.
Much better than your hips and knees. Turf surface, much better than
nice.
Your knees. And wisely, it won't. If a lot of us, if you and I, Mike, I'll meet you up at the track, Mike. Let's go do some community loops.
Right.
And we're not wearing the track out. This multi-million-dollar Olympic caliber track. We've gone from the worst track in the conference to when they open the gates on
right.
March 24th. It's looking like March 24th now. It's kind of the official opening day, because that's their first home meet. We're gonna have the best. If not the best, one of the best track
right.
field facilities in America. So very excited. And he had a packed room full of people and really neat. He goes, Eugene is known as Tracktown USA. That's his nickname.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, I want to be called Trackville USA.
That's cool.
You know, we're the East Coast version of that. And he goes, there's no reason we can't. And he's right. I mean, we've got a great running community. I feel very, very proud to be a part of that running community. And we've got we have good competitive cross-country team, competitive track team. We can be better. You start notching this all up. Wow. We got a great post-collegiate team. It's only 4 years old, and already we're starting to develop some of these athletes to the national, international level.
Right.
You can see feeding that, you know, and then all of a sudden you got post-collegiate kids coming to town that are trained for the Olympics. Be really neat. So we left, everybody
That's
left
great.
The room pretty jazzed. And on top of it all, just a nice guy. And so are the assistant coaches, this Watson and Morgan, just really down to earth. You know, they're just so taken. It's really cool. It's kind of like Teresa Sullivan when she got the job as president of UVA.
Right.
In her acceptance speech at the Rotunda that day when they announced her and she stood up and everybody clapped and then she gave a little talk. One of the coolest things I loved about her talk was she got the phone call that she had gotten the job. She was sitting in an airport. She got on the cell phone. She's in the waiting area at the airport. She goes, after I hung up the phone, I wanted to jump up and scream, all right. And I thought, that is an all right moment. You've just been tapped to be the president of one of the most prestigious universities in this country. It's so cool to hear someone put it in terms of appreciate it, and it's a human side.
Right.
You know, if you got the head basketball job at UVA,
right.
I mean, you've arrived. Isn't that a moment to jump up and down and say, but you hardly ever hear somebody say that. They always say it's an honor and blah, blah, blah. It's
sure,
always the
sure.
cliche stuff. So Watson and Morgan and Fetcher, all three of them said that night, we feel like we're blessed.
Mm.
This is a real honor. This is the job of a lifetime.
Right.
We want to be here for a long time. We see this as an end job, not a job to a means to another job.
Right.
You know, pretty cool.
Yeah, so, that's great.
Anyway, it was great.
That's a good way to put it.
Speaking of Ragamount Racing, I talked about that a little bit there. Donnie Cowart, our Olympic trials bound and hopefully Olympic bound steeplechaser is trying to some shorter stuff this winter to get his wheels turning, get some of the rust off, spin it a little faster. He was invited up to yet another elite invitational event, this time at the Armory in New York over the weekend. Ran the 1500, led it the entire way till the final straightaway. And indoors,
wow,
that's a smaller track.
Exactly.
So when I say the final straightaway, that's like 50 meters.
Wow.
He led it, and this 800-meter guy, 146 800-meter guy, came out of nowhere and rocketed by him. Donnie went with him and hung with him, but guy out-leaned him, and it was like a half of a second he beat him by. But anyway, 341.7. And that's for 1,500 meters, and there's a little guide. It's usually a 17-second tack on if you want to figure out what your mile time would be. So it's the Olympic kind of metric version of the miles, 1,500 meters, because they don't run the mile. Little-known fact sometimes to armchair fans of the sport that they don't run the actual mile in the Olympics. They run, you know, 3 3/4 laps. So anyway, I think I better get that right in my head here. But anyway, indoors, 341.7. is a sub-4-minute mile if you attack on the 17 seconds. Just right there on the edge. So good for Donnie there. It's indoor, the end of the indoor season for the high schoolers, and indoor, interesting enough, has gotten to be more of a prominent and serious sport over the last several years. It used to be indoor was a gap between cross-country and outdoor. Now it's become a really good training regimen of sorts for baseball players. A baseball coach says, you're doing indoor track. It's a good fitness program. Lacrosse player, you're doing indoor track. It's going to help you with your speed and blah, blah, blah. So you get a lot of kids that aren't going to run outdoor track come into indoor, and they're taking it pretty doggone seriously. So the intensity of the sport has picked up quite a bit. So there is actually something called districts and regionals and state championship in the indoor season. Not all of the divisions used to do that years ago. And Almar went up to Warrington yesterday or on Tuesday and ran. Interesting enough, it's such a nice day, and they do this on purpose. They pick the nicest day of the week, and the host school does this for indoors. They have it outdoors. So kind of a little trivia thing there. The indoor district championship, indoor track and field championship was held outdoors. And Al Marl, a couple of the boys really racked up a pile of points for the Patriots. Ryan Thomas, the sophomore sensation. He finished second in the mile with a 4:19. Now he's under 4:20. 4:19, pretty decent time. He finished second. And then fifth in the 1,000 with an also very impressive 2:36 clock stopper. And his teammate, Speedy Adam Vissakay, one of my favorites. I talk about him quite often. He had a nifty double. He clocked a 4:23 mile and then surged to a 9:43 in the 3200, the 2 mile. And Alec was telling us that they couldn't separate him and the other guy. They tied. And I don't know if they didn't have the equipment for a photo finish, but he goes, Dad, really? There's no way you could have separated the two.
It was the closest thing I've ever seen
to a virtual tie. So I don't know the boy's name. I went online this morning to try and find some results in there. There, interestingly, was very difficult to find. Normally, Milestat has got loads of results, and they had not been posted. So, see, at 56, I've become what I swore. I used to get so frustrated with people. They're demanding results so quickly, because in the old days, a lot of times you'd wait for a results booklet to come in the mail after road race.
Yeah.
You know, nothing was published immediately on a computer, because in the early 80s, a computer, forget it. So now we want instant, 10 minutes after something's over, where's the results?
So I
find it pretty weird that some of my athletes, I know how they've done in a marathon before they know how they've done.
That's strange.
That's odd and a little disturbing. So anyway, here I am saying, why aren't the results up for the district meet? Cool story while we're still talking indoors, and it really one of my favorites running scenes I've witnessed in a long time, and it will go down in my book of, tales that really, things that I've been privy to or watched or been part of that, define the sport.
Right.
So here's these two boys, Zach Kaufman and Guillaume Bailey. I'm going to pronounce his first name wrong. It's a French name, but anyway, it's G-U-I-L-L-A-U-M-E. They're seniors at Albemarle.
Okay.
And last week, I find out that Alec is set up, and we may have talked about this, a little polar bear meet, but it ended up being outdoors.
Right.
Nice weather. It was for kids, last chance for everything. Last chance to qualify for districts, last chance to do a variety of things. Well, these boys, as it turns out, they're seniors. They're both lacrosse players, last chance for them to break the five-minute mile. They had never done it. Now, five-minute barrier is a big deal your freshman, sophomore year. Usually, a decent miler will get it by sophomore, junior year. But this was their last, they're telling me.
Last chance.
Find out that, Mr. Lawrence, this is the last time we're probably going to ever run a mile. Because we're not running outdoor track. We're seniors. And we're not going to run in college because we're not that great. And the odds of them, you go to college and you start to get on the other side of real fitness when it comes to running a sub-five-minute mile.
Sure.
So they're realizing that maybe this is the last chance in their life. And I'm not saying that they couldn't, at 29 years old, whip themselves into shape and run a sub-five-minute mile. But the odds of them doing that, it's probably not going to happen. Okay. So I get there just as the gun is going off. I was late getting over there because I had a meeting. I'm rushing over there. And I'm like, what the heck is Alec doing in the race? He's, to me, he looked like an old man out there. He's 27 years old. And so I realized that because this is it's an official meet, but it's not that official.
Okay.
And these boys are not qualifying for districts. No one in this race. It was a field of milers, and he was trying to take as many of them under 5 minutes as a rabbit.
Gotcha.
So here he is, the assistant coach, and he's going by, and he's talking to him. He's like, come on, guys. Come on, Zach. Come on, you guys. Come on, stay with me. I'm taking you. Takes him through the first lap. Now, to run 5 minute miles, you got to run 75 seconds per lap. Okay?
Okay.
So he takes him through in about 75 right there. And a rabbit usually drops out. So after two laps, they're a little under 2:30. So they're still there, 2 minutes and 30 seconds. He's still running with them. But he's, he's kind of right just a step in front of him, talking to him. Come on, guys. Come. No giving up. Let's go. Third lap. Now I realize they've got a good chance of getting it. So he's still with them, talking to him, coaching him, comes around that final straightaway, pulls off to the side, and he's yelling at him as they get down. Zach, 4:52.
Nice.
And this Guillaume, I'm sure I'm getting it wrong. Alec would kill me because he was getting so mad the other night I wasn't pronouncing it properly. He runs 4:57.
Wow.
Mike, you would have thought those boys had just won the Boston Marathon. And as far as I'm concerned, what they had done in their lives was just as important.
That's great.
They've got it the rest of their lives. They're sub-five-minute clubbers. In the scrapbook, done. So I go over to congratulate him. I took a picture for Facebook and to put on my blog.
Let's check that out.
They were so proud. And Zach goes, Sloan, there's no way could have done it without Alec. I said, oh, yes, you could have. I said, all he did was out there is he's getting you to believe that you can keep going. It's because it's such a mental game. You physically, Zach, you accomplished that. So
that's wonderful.
Anyway, I mean, to me, it was a special moment all the way around. More importantly, the boys and their reaction. Because afterwards, I went over to Cynthia. I said, look at them over there. Yeah. They're king of stinking world right now.
Right.
Because they have broken a five-minute mile.
That's great.
They can, you know, ride off or run off into the sunset. It's all over. Very cool.
Get a podcast for them of just Alec talking in their head. You know, put some headbuds in there. Just motivation for
it's
runs.
Cool. I, some folks might say, you know, he shouldn't have been doing that. You know, blah blah blah. And my notion is, here's the kids. They did it on their own, and it was special all
That's
the way
cool.
around. They're crazy about their coach, and I'm watching young athletes being crazy about my son.
Yeah.
And my son loving all of this. You know, working with young people and helping them, because he assists with Buzz over there. He's not the head coach, but it means the world to me. I mean, you know, it's a sport I love.
You know?
Seeing my children love it, seeing my children give back means a lot. So anyway, congrats to those two boys.
Very cool.
Valentine's Run coming up this Saturday. That's out at it's the Amnesty International folks, along with the Charlottesville Track Club. It's out at Old Trail, 8 o'clock this same one. You can sign up on race day, 7 o'clock to 7:30. Carol Finch and company, they do a slam-bang job. I'll be out there marking the course nice and early, and I'll call the mile split off. It's a partner's event. You have to have a partner, so Mike and you and your gal can drive out there. And you can be male, female.
Next year,
you'll be husband-wife. You can
enter
that category. And if you don't have a partner, they'll fix you up with someone. The joke, of course, is you never even see the person. It's just so they keep everything orderly.
Right. Actually, I had somebody ask me about that.
You have to have somebody. You come out and you're unattached. Like if I showed up and I didn't have anyone, they would hook me up with someone. And if it's a female, I'm now in the male-female category.
Right.
And if it's a male, I'm in the male-male category. So
gotcha.
It's very simple. But they do have husband-wife, and I think they have parent-child, too, with the categories, which... you would not at this point qualify for either one of those.
Not yet.
So again, that's Saturday. All the money back to Amnesty International. Again, the Schultz will track up all of their events. 100% of the proceeds go back to the cause. 2 weeks from this Saturday, on the 25th, I want to start getting people thinking about this. I'm helping the Haven put on a run for the homeless downtown. In fact, when I leave here, I'm going to go downtown and check out a slightly different course than we've used in the past. But that's in 2 weeks on the 25th. And the Getting It Right department, I always like to add some good stories. People that are doing things right with their running. This last couple of weeks, I've been so impressed with a lot of these 10-miler folks that are starting to experience little niggly things. I always say if the pain is on one side of your body and it doesn't go away after one or two runs, call your coach or stop by or get some professional help beyond me. And the number of people calling, I'm saying, when did this start? Yesterday. When did this start? 2 days ago. When did it start? Just a few days ago. Awesome. Because the sooner you catch something, the better we can. And I talk about getting it right, but then also getting it wrong. I had one woman call, and she said, Mark, my knee has been hurting me. How long? Oh, we went right back to the date, the literal date. It was about 2 weeks. So she was good to call me, but she waited a little bit long. I said, went through everything, her training regimen, you know, because in the training program, sometimes people, we talked about this, add a couple extra days, they shouldn't be, add some extra mileage when they shouldn't be.
Right.
No, everything clean. So I said, anything, any other different, for answer about fatigue, work, stress, anything, travel, nothing. How about another physical activity? Have you added anything to your regimen? Yes. I said, what is it? She says, well, on my off days, my recovery days, I started a Zumba class. Now, that's high intensity. It's great workout, but it does not allow you to recover
heal,
if you are a new runner shooting for a 10-miler. She's up to 7 miles for a long run, which is a huge deal. Bingo. We got it. Literally, the knee pain started 1 week after she started this.
Interesting.
And she had gone since October 29th pain-free. She got all the way to the end of January pretty much without a problem, started this up. And so I said, you know, you got to find sport-specific cross-training. So if you're training for a marathon, doing something that's boom, 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 bouncing off the ground, high intensity, get your heart rate up real high, pushing off, you know, your knees are getting pounded, you're probably going to get in the breakdown land. So, how many times you heard me say, run in the pool, elliptical, yoga, you know, ball class, you know, Pilates, those are the ones that can balance out. Heidi Johnson, I talk about her quite often. She's my captain for the Boston Bound gang. These are folks that train through the winter for a spring marathon, most of them specifically Boston. I call them the graduate program students because they've been through things like the 10-miler training program several times. And right. They've done a marathon already, been through the track club training program for marathon, half marathon. Now they've kind of gotten matured in their running, so they come into this group, and she's the captain. And talk about getting it right. The other day, she hurt her knee. She tripped and fell and bruised her knee a little bit. But when she hit the ground, her pushing off the – when she, you know, braced herself hitting the ground, right. She hurt her shoulder. Didn't feel that till the next day.
Yeah.
Going out for a run the next morning, there was a gang of us. I'm not kidding you, Mike. We might have gone 100 steps down the road, and it was just a normal 5-mile recovery run. And she goes, I'm feeling my knee a little bit, but more importantly, I'm feeling the shoulder, and I'm adjusting my striatum cast. I said, go back. Go.
Don't risk it.
She took the day off. A lot better now. This morning, she's out there doing a workout and looking like a champ. Mm. And I was thinking, man, Heidi, you're a captain, and a captain is supposed to lead by example.
Right.
And I couldn't ask for, you know, anything better in that regard. But I don't know if she could have done that 3 or 4 years ago. You know, that's a maturing of an athlete to be able to say, this run doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And my body's giving me some feedback. A lot of times people are trying to drive through that. And, you know, so it's definitely a pat on the back to her. A couple of tips, reminding folks, don't ever increase your weekly mileage by more than 10 to 15% on any given week. That's a huge one that gets ignored quite often. Unless, obviously, if you were running, Mike, 1 week you ran 40 miles and you took a recovery week and went back down to 25, the next week you go back up to 40 again, that's fine. But if you're a person who's just gotten to 25 and then you go to 27 and you go to 30 and then you jump up to 40, you're going to get injured.
Right.
It's going to happen pretty efficiently, pretty quickly. The change in routine, oh my gosh, you know, we just talked about this one with the adding the Zumba class, but it can be as simple as we've gone from Charlottesville High School, we've moved over for the 10-mile training program, we're over in the U-Haul parking lot, University Hall parking lot, to start our runs each week.
Yeah.
And we've discovered right off the bat some folks have been getting banged up. And so I'm thinking, what is the difference?
Yeah.
We're still, you know, still in the same program, same coach. They've only increased their long run by half a mile. On any given week, their long run by half a mile. What could it be? Realize Charlottesville High School track. They did 3 laps on that track before they started out. We're doing 1 lap around a makeshift parking lot track because we can't get on the UVA track yet. They climb over the Charlottesville High School scenario. You climb out of that track for almost 3 miles before you get to a downhill. You come out of the UVA track, at the UVA parking, University Hall parking lot, over by the cage. You come up over the Morgan Harrington Bridge there, and you're suddenly at a downhill. Then you go down Alderman, another downhill. Then you go behind the stadium, another steep downhill. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe it's something to do with that.
Yeah.
And then they've been running on blacktop most of the way. We're on concrete sidewalks because I warned them. I said, we go back to UVA. It's congested there traffic-wise, and there are traffic lights. We've been running over near Charlottesville High School in those neighborhoods.
Yeah,
there are no traffic lights over there. So what happens with the traffic light? You got
to
get single fog on the sidewalk. So there's dips in the sidewalks. And what sidewalk? Concrete. Concrete 20 times less shock absorbent than blacktop. So I'm thinking, oh my God, we've never done this before because we've always been at UVA for the whole winter.
This is a little different.
Here it is midstream. And I mean, the phone was ringing off the hook on Monday.
That's wild.
And Tuesday this week, I'm like, I visited my employees. I don't know if I can take one more call.
Right.
I love these guys communicating with me. I keep telling them they need to, but I'm starting to think I'm a crappy coach. So then I'm thinking, wait a second.
Right.
They can't all be getting hurt just on this given week. Nothing changed in the training program. Mileage.
It's unbelievable.
I changed up the
course enough, yeah.
The terrain and the surface and the warm-up. So I got to figure out how to beat that. Just a quick history lesson for folks. We're getting ready to open up the new UVA track. Lanigan Field, Pop Lanigan, legendary coach, one of those. You remember in the old days at universities, you had the history teacher that also coached the tennis team, that also coached the track team.
Right.
The specialized coach didn't exist in the old days, particularly
right.
in universities that weren't necessarily athletic driven.
Sure.
And so Pop Lanigan wore lots of hats. 1954, they dedicated Lanigan Field. That was the year Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile for the first time. And over the years, obviously, it's had a kind of a neat history. It fell into disrepair over the last several years as UVA was making movement towards a new facility. I think it was less and less being kind of focused on doing little little maintenance here and there. But it had some glory years. And I remember back we hosted ACCs back when Paul Ehring had just won the Olympic gold medal in the 800 that fall. So that next spring, so that would have been the spring of 89, here's the Olympic gold medalist, the fastest guy in the world. And, you know, he's a University of Virginia student. And the stands were packed for his event, you know, when he came out and, you know, to see this guy blow the rest of the ACC away. Because, gosh, the guy who can blow away the Olympic field can probably handle his own the conference. But a little blip, I can remember the previous time we hosted ACCs, the university had resurfaced the track that winter in preparation for ACCs, and it didn't cure enough, as it, you know, because you run into delays and normal stuff. And we had we were hosting ACCs, so we had to get this track done.
Yeah.
And so the you know, it wasn't ACCs. It was actually it was called the Cavalier Invitational. It was this big prestigious meet. We had all these people coming from all over the country for athletes. And they, that surface didn't get to cure properly. And that thing bubbled up within 6 to 8 months. Sections of it, not the whole thing peeled
up.
But it, I was reminded now when UVA's been saying, no, we're not going to use this till it's cured.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know,
right move.
Getting it right. So anyway, Neil Gorman, probably one of the most accomplished, one of the most accomplished ultra trail runners in this country, has moved to Charlottesville with his he and his wife, Gabby. And this guy is the real deal. He's kind of one of the stars of the sport. And the other day, he ran the entire RTF, the 20-mile Urban Greenbelt Loop. And he did it in 2 hours and 9 minutes and 47 seconds, which, according to Sophie Spidell, one of his buddies and a good buddy of mine, and she's another great ultramarathon trail runner, she said it was a FKT, the 209.47. You know what FKT stands for? Fastest known time. So we don't know if there was anybody to run it because it's not a traditional kind of thing to say who has the Charlottesville 10-miler record. Well, I can tell you, it's 49.18 or whatever. No, the guy, it's established. But who's run? Because people do it all the time, and nobody's going to, you know, talk about it. And so this guy went out intentionally to try and set a time and to raise some money for the RTF, which he's passed on a nice donation.
What does that come to, a mile?
It's about 7-minute pace. Gotcha. And over a lot of that terrain, bad footing, steep terrain over on the western side, pretty doggone good. Whew. Neil, so congrats to him.
Very cool.
And he's challenged folks to anybody out there that, you know, thinks they can beat it to go ahead. Not in a cocky way, but just to say,
go for
let's
it.
Get something going here. This is fun.
Making fun, yeah.
All right. I think that is about it. I'm looking through here. Yeah, that's about it. So thanks, everyone, for listening this week. And, gosh, get outside and enjoy the milder. It's not spring light, but get out and enjoy the milder weather. And we'll talk to you next week.
This week's edition of RunCast was brought to you by the Ragged Mountain Running Shop, Central Virginia's community running and walking family partner since 1982. Conveniently located on the historic UVA corner with free parking at their doorstop. Visit them online at RaggedMountainRunning.com or make sure you friend them on Facebook, Ragged Mountain Running Shop.